Hello, welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we are going to start Unit 8, Citizenship, with topic Liberal Democracy, Citizenship and Civil Culture. In liberal democracy, public authority is exercised in the name of free and equal citizens. The free and equal citizens who are ruled in their own name, or in other words, they rule themselves. At the same time, the state is expected to play some role in the making of free and equal citizens in whose name it rules. Public education and other fora of culture supported by the state help form and sustain such an identity. Mode of education and other cultural institutions of liberal democratic society define its citizens as free and equal individuals who are incidentally members of particular ethnic, class, and religious communities. Ethnic, class, and religious relations often beget hierarchical relations. Liberal democracy suggests that the hierarchies generated by such communities are irrelevant to the state in its treatment of citizens. Marxist and in recent years, the communitarians have found that such an understanding of citizenship is idealistic and narrow and does not take seriously the embedded nature of citizens. However, public education in a liberal democracy till recently had the effect of relativizing the hierarchies and ranking systems generated by particularistic cultural communities. It suggested that the identities of citizens should not be wholly or exclusively governed by the principles and values underlying those hierarchies. Civic education, which was integral to the building up of citizenship, attempted to inculcate certain normative standards, such as the ideal attitudes, dispositions, and values proper to citizens. Such a civic culture was seen as supportive of citizenship. However, it has to be noted that public education, in turn, created hierarchies distinctive of its own, where institutions and disciplines came to be ranked according to the polarization they enjoyed in the market. Therefore, civic culture that liberal democracy threw up was profoundly ambivalent. Civic culture as a specific form of culture pertaining to public life proposes worldviews, ways of life, ideas of nature, and standards of excellence that shape human behavior and self-understanding. It is created, transformed, and reproduced by processes of persuasion. The norms proper to civic life are expected to be internalized by citizens in their interface with civic culture. However, while offering a normative order, ranking, and directing citizen activity, a civic culture permits significant spaces for contestation and to propose alternative ways of life. It may therefore beget a wildly plural understanding of citizenship. Therefore, civic culture itself needs to be vetted by the rule of law. However, civic culture has with it certain resources by which the pluralism that it begets remains normally within certain limits. Civic culture lays down a civic moral ideal before its members based on the standpoint of free and equal individuality. Further, given the fact that the self-understanding of members of a society are shaped by the moral standards of the particularistic cultural communities to which they belong, civic culture has a strong contravailing edge. The impact of the former begins to tell strongly from birth itself, through the rituals and practices of the community, while civic educational processes have their impact relatively late. Now let us move to the next point, that is Marxism and citizenship. The Marxist tradition has not engaged with the citizenship issue consistently, but to the extent it does, there is a deep ambivalence about it. Marxism feels that the ideology of the capitalist state by and large recasts social relations as relations between citizens, putting a gloss on them as class relations. At the same time, the human agency that citizenship further is appreciated as its sharpness, the contradiction within capitalism itself. Marxism has not adequately reflected on how an older notion such as citizenship has been deployed under capitalism and made to play a role which is central in capitalist ideology. Such a perspective therefore makes certain notions closely bound with citizenship, such as rights, justice, and freedom, ambivalent. For Marxism, the basic social relations in all class-divided societies are class relations. It is the relation between the peasantry and landlords under feudalism and between the working class and the bourgeois that decisively shape the social relations under feudalism and capitalism, respectively. If class relations project themselves as basic, then social relations would be mixed in class struggle, endangering social unity that is worth relying on and bringing to the fore the coercive character of the state to the full, to hold classes and class struggle at bay. The ideology of the state plays a major role in containing class struggle and in reconstituting social relations on the basis other than class relations. Under capitalism, Marxists argue, social relations are formulated by this ideology as relations between citizens. The citizens are declared as free and equal, and sometimes as rooted in a cultural ethos and civilizational bond. The freedom and equality of citizens has its counterpart in the exchange relation of the market, where from a one-sided view, equals gets exchanged for equals, and the agents of such a system of exchange are free to exchange the product they have. However, such an ideology formulated by the state can be seen as superficial and partial when understanding and analysis is not confined to the surface. In such an exercise, social relations are marked as class relations that are caught in an irreversible struggle between basic classes. For Marxist, however, state ideology has a real basis on all societies, including capitalism, although that real basis lies in an exclusive and one-sided projection of social reality. It is not mere krishma. Social agents, irrespective of the classes they belong to, come to locate their role and place in society in and through this ideology. In capitalist society, the force of this ideology remains persuasive and pervasive due to the massive institutional and ideological complexes of the state through which it is disseminated, such as public education, the media, civic association, political parties, trade unions, legal and juridical organizations, and sometimes religious organizations as well. The French philosopher Louis Althusser called them the ideological apprentices of the state. The consciousness of social agents routinely and prominently under conditions of this ideology remains consciousness of citizens, unless and as long as it is not challenged by the contradictions of capitalism and class struggle to overcome them. Marxism therefore called for a double critique of the notion of free and equal citizenship avowed by liberal democracy without denying the worth of the notion itself. First, it expresses only the superficial phase of the market-related freedoms of the bourgeois society and hides the profound contradictions in which social relations under capitalism are caught. An entire array of public institutions rest on this notion and in their turn reinforce it. Secondly, rights and duties associated with citizenship are important and necessary to lay bare the contradictions of the capitalist relations and mount struggles to overcome them. Social classes cannot organize themselves if the basic freedom associated with citizenship are denied to social agents. Now let us move to the next point, that is persons and citizen. Philosophically, human beings are conferred attributes and prerogatives that mark them off from other beings. But communities and states have given them little positive consideration unless they are insiders or they are brought within the larger civilizational matrix of which state and communities are parts. In modern times, however, there have been certain attempts to confer a set of rights on all human beings, qua human beings. The Universal Declaration of Rights is an apt example of the same. Citizens, however, have always been endowed with special rights, be it with Greeks, the Romans, or members of city-states. In modern times, however, large social movements have striven towards an inclusionary understanding of citizenship. These movements have also striven to bring about a social order where everyone enjoys equal rights. According to Turner, citizenship rights are the outcome of social movements that either aim to expand or defend the definition of social membership. These movements, he feels, have been able to expand and universalize citizenship rights for an ever widening number of persons. At the same time, citizenship is an act of closure about a group of people it calls citizens. Consequently, states are very particular about whom they call citizens. Hoffman and Jonalski suggest that there are four categories of citizens who have been either excluded from citizenship or had to put up a relentless struggle to be accepted as citizens. The first one is stigmatized humans. They are supposed to be those who suffer from a social defilement or infirmity. They include the class-based poor, gender disqualified women, racial or ethnic groups who are attributed low status, gender despite homosexual groups, etc. They are also the most common category of candidates for citizenship. These groups are seen as unable to perform the duties and accept the rights of citizenship due to their narrow interests, which are unlikely to benefit the community. They are often charged with their social superiors as selling their votes, being in the control of their husbands or caretakers, and not having the enough education or mental capacity to make a decision. Cultural and value discrimination have sometimes brought religious minorities and gay groups to within this category. These groups had to put up relentless struggles for equal citizenship, and the battles are still on. The second one is impaired humans. They may hail from established citizen groups, but their competence to fulfill rights and obligations may be questioned due to physical or mental disabilities that preclude action or good judgment and make them dependent upon others. The inclusion movement in many countries, however, has brought about significant changes in the condition of the mentally and physically challenged. The third one is potential humans. They include the fetus in the womb, accident victims in a permanent coma, unconscious patient, or aged citizen who have lost all thought and activity processes other than involuntary life sustenance. They, of course, have their rights, but we cannot speak little of their obligations. And the fourth one is human-like non-humans or quasi-humans. Nations, ethnic, and even religious groups could be included in this category. They are endowed with certain group rights, which we will discuss shortly. They are a second type of social actors who fall in this category, such as corporations and offices whose claim for being treated as corporatist units are significantly different from nations, ethnic groups, and religious communities. Corporate rights lead to systematic class and size bias and place them in contention with the notion of free and equal citizenship. Here we want to wind up today's lecture. Thank you so much for your attention.